This week, on Three Sides of the Coin, we spend a little time talking about Kiss caskets, how they started with the man who created them. And we got to tease this right up front. Mark reveals he studied to be a mortician. Guys, this is a whole new world that's just been opened up. We'd get another 10 years of this podcast out of the fact that Mark studied to be a mortician.
Well, and now I understand why so many girls he would ask him to like sit in a tub full of ice.
Maybe this is why when Ozzy threw raw meat at him, it didn't freak Mark out. I don't know. I don't
Sorry, honey,
know.
you got to
This
be below 85 degrees.
is an absolutely fun, eye-opening episode. We learn a lot this week.
Oh, God.
Visit threesidesofthecoin.com. Subscribe on YouTube. Follow and rate us on Spotify. Subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. We appreciate your support. Are you looking for official Three Sides of the Coin merchandise? T-shirts, hoodies, and more? Visit shop3sidesofthecoin.com. We ship worldwide.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of Three Sides of the Coin. You got Mike, you got Tommy, and you got the mortician. You're going to learn about that one in a little bit.
Oh boy.
We've got an absolutely fun, insightful, great interview. We talk about Kiss caskets, classic rock radio, and that Mark studied to be a mortician. Did you know that? Did you? I didn't. This is absolutely fascinating. It brings this episode to a whole nother level.
It's
Mark
true.
the
Have
mortician.
the tuna fish eat the mayonnaise.
Yeah. Call Starkist.
God. Oh, we th th this this
This is
week we're
Bill
gonna get we're
telling
gonna
Chuck to shut up.
let's just get right into this interview. We are joined by Pat Fant. Who Pat is the man responsible for Kiss caskets and the fact they could be used as coolers. And in that discussion with Pat about caskets, Mark reveals he studied to be a mortician. And then we segue out because Pat has even more history in Texas doing classic rock radio for decades. And we have some amazing discussions about classic rock, not just in Texas, but in general. This is a fun episode. There's a lot of laughs. I don't know if, yeah, there is minutia. The minutia that marks a mortician.
Hey Chuck, is this a picture of your wife? Yeah. Oh, nice frame.
Name of the deceased, something Polish.
Who knows what we're talking about, too? I think that that's fair.
Barney
Oh my
Rubble.
God.
What an actor.
You got just let this roll and we're going to see you at the end. Three sides of the coin. This, I'll be honest, this is going to be an interesting interview. When this one came across my email, I was like, really? There's a topic to just talk about coffins
Well,
and
let's call them caskets now.
caskets. All right,
Yes,
the Kiss casket.
that's right.
And I was intrigued by it because, I mean, before we dive into this, I was working with Kiss and I was working at Sony at, well, it was Sony Signatures, but at the time it was Signatures Network, who was the licensing company representing Kiss. When the Kiss casket was announced, I remember the press release going out and, plugging this on Kiss Online and our guest Pat Fant here is the man responsible for it. I don't have the emails, but I remember Pat's name and I remember emailing Pat questions about the Kiss casket. So, you know what? We're going to talk about caskets today.
Yes. And how it all fits together with rock and roll and music and radio and everything else we were doing at the time.
Yeah, so and Pat, you are more than just a guy who did some caskets for Kiss and other brands. Give us a quick 2 minute. Who is Pat? What's your history? Well, what have you done?
You know, I accidentally did caskets. I had an idea one day driving with my sales manager to a radio station sales appointment. And I thought, you know, I wonder if we could make caskets the same as we wrap the station van with, you know, the pressure vinyl that's printed. And I thought, God, I bet you could do that if you did it right. If you print these right, and then you have the panel, and you apply the panel, and you put nine of them on, next thing you know, you have a three-dimensional image on a casket. So then you could start themes. What could it be? Fairway to Heaven for golfers. The Race is Over for NASCAR fans. Well, we had Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine, Coast Guard. We had 35 different.
You had like major colleges and universities too, didn't you?
We had some. We had Texas A&M. I think we had a couple. You know, that was a weird market. It was easier to do the ones that were about branches of military service than it was to crack the colleges, because it was a pain to work with. But, you know, I didn't intend to be in the casket business. It was a severe career change at the time. I was a radio station general manager in Houston and Dallas. I had big, big radio stations that I was running that made a lot of money. And the Telecommunications Act of 1996 came in and turned radio on its head. So I wound up being punished, and I had to live in Dallas for 6 years. And so I was up there running a couple of radio stations, Q102 and something else. And anyway, this idea came to me. And in radio, one of the stations that I put on in Houston, The Buzz, we used to have honk if you own us bumper stickers, because hell, we had four owners in 2 years. So it didn't really matter anymore. It was getting crazy. So I thought, well, hell, I'm just going to make a business out of putting art on caskets, call it the Art Casket. Named the company White Light. So White Light decides to be in the casket business accidentally. And one of the first things we thought of, well, not first, but eventually, was to build a casket for Kiss. What if we created the Kiss casket? We'd get the right image. I had a fantastic artist who knew how to create the images in the right pattern to fit in the sections of a casket, the head, or the lid, bottom and top, and the sides, and the whole thing. It's a three-dimensional piece. So this Kiss casket was beautiful. So we started...
And you picked Kiss because obviously, you know, us crazy Kiss fans will buy anything Kiss with casket. The freaking logo on it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you make a Kiss casket, Kiss fans are going to buy it. So I started a conversation with Gene Simmons, and we had a relationship with him anyway, because he used to come to Houston to our rock and roll auction that KLOL did here for so many years. And he, I think, wrote the foreword to the book that my midday person, Dana Steele, was on. And so we had a relationship. He had been to the station before. So we started talking about what could we do with a Kiss casket. We decided that, number one, you do not have to be dead to buy one of these, because that would just be delayed reward. So why not own the casket now? And, you know, for the time being, hell, you could serve long necks out of the, pop the lid open.
There you go.
In the top, serve long necks out of it. And so.
It's a beer fridge.
He and I met at License 2000 in New York in 2000. And it was an event that unveiled the Kiss casket. and he had the girls all lined up to come in, and they were serving long necks out of the lid of the casket. They put a bus tub in there and fill it with ice, put long necks in. So people were going crazy from this. We thought, man, this is going to work, and it did. We sold a lot of them. We've pounded down quite a few in the ground too. I think Dimebag is buried in one.
He was.
Yep. Yeah. I think Gene gave the family a casket.
Yeah. Sure. So, and we were glad to do that. So, next thing you know, I mean, the whole thing just blew up, and it was working quite well. Gene and Paul would sign a death certificate of authenticity. So let's be sure we put that. I want to put that inside the casket, so when the family gets it and opens it up, it's like, oh crap, look, this is signed by Gene and Paul, and it's my death certificate of authenticity. And you save it, you give it to the kids. So
that's awesome.
It was fun, you know. I mean, why not? It was just so fun. And Kiss was the perfect band to do it. And of course, he understood exactly how the whole thing goes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kiss is not afraid to try anything. They're not they're not embarrassed by anything. But I remember when the casket was announced and revealed, and the whole cooler aspect had, I think that's what really got people talking. It wasn't, I mean, yes, it was kind of, oh, a casket with Kiss logos on it. But to pitch it as, don't worry, you can use it right now. You can use it as a cooler in your backyard. People were like, are you telling me to take a casket out and put it in the backyard and serve beer out of it?
Yes.
That, I think, is what got people really paying attention and perking up.
And it should. I mean, that's crazy. But, you know, that was the feel of it all. And that's part of the fun. And that's why he liked it. I liked it. We really enjoyed doing this. You know, we got a ton of press, obviously. I mean, I can't even remember all the press. But I know we were in the New York Times, CBS Morning Show, CNN more than once. You know, people just were fascinated. Hell, I was on, what show was it? I was on To Tell the Truth. And they brought me out, and they had to guess between me and two other guys who was the real me that created the Kiss casket. And there were two other jokers, and it wasn't them. That's for sure. It was me. And so, you know, the casket was on the stage. They had it in front of the panel of experts over there. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah, the casket, and I don't know this for a fact, but it seems like it was probably the first band to put a casket together. I don't know if anybody else had done it.
No.
I mean, I'm sure somebody did a one-off here or there where they had somebody maybe airbrush or paint spray paint a casket, but you were the first one to like legitimize it. You can get a real wrapped casket with Kiss logos all over it. And you're right, the press was everywhere, and my takeaway was, it in itself was just a piece to get Gene to talk about anything he wanted, because everybody wanted to talk about the casket. I mean, even to this day, one of Gene and Paul's favorite sayings is, you know, with Kiss, we get you coming and going with condoms and caskets.
That's right. That's right. Well, he certainly had the personality and the temperament for the whole thing. And of course, he understands economics. And God, you know, when we came out with that, it was powerful, and people still talk about it to this day.
Now you're not doing them to
no.
now, are you?
No.
Okay.
No. You know, like any other business, this one we got screwed over by an investment company that said, "Yeah, we want to invest in this." Okay, and they own funeral homes. We thought, well, hey, that's just perfect. And we'll be able to get on the floor, the showroom floor of more than just that I think we were in 200 locations. We should be in 10,000. So they gave us some money and kind of set it up for failure so that we could not succeed. And they basically took over the board, took over the company, and bankrupted the whole thing because we had figured out how to sell caskets direct to the public. And in the funeral business, you work one side of the street or the other. You don't work both. And so if we're selling direct to the consumer and not making you pay 10 times the price in a funeral home, then they don't want anything to do with us.
And so they'd rather invest in you and put you out of business.
Invest in us, put us out of business is exactly what happened. And I mean, I got a U.S. patent for this. I actually have a U.S. process patent for the art cast. My kids will be very impressed. So, but anyway, I'm back to radio where I belong.
Well, I have a question about casket. I've always wondered. And also, matter of fact, I don't even think our co-hosts know this about me. This is a true story. I was going to school to be a mortician.
Oh.
So I worked at
we can go miles on this one.
So boy, I worked at a funeral home for over a year. I know the ins and outs. Yes.
Oh dear.
So anyways, but
Tommy's head is exploding right now. The bits he can do on this one.
So all kidding aside about that, again, because I do know that industry. Were those printed on demand? Because I don't think you ever never mass marketed those.
Well, they were printed on demand because they had to be built on demand.
Correct.
I mean, we did not have a way, didn't know of a way, couldn't come up with a way to automate the process. So they go down an assembly line and some machine sticks the material on it and comes out at the end and loads on the truck. So we didn't know how to do that. I don't know how you would do that. Maybe AI could do that. But so we had to actually create them one at a time when someone would order them or buy them or something. But we could do it in 24 hours and have it to FedEx, to the door of the funeral home in your town the next day. And that was quite a stunt. So we had a warehouse in Dallas with about 1,000 boxes in there that were already owned by somebody. And we're just waiting for the call. And then we call FedEx and go, it's time to come pick up another one. And they pick up every day from the back door of our warehouse and send them to funeral homes around the country. And if it was a KISS casket, if it was this kind of casket, it just depends on which one it was.
Well, that was my next question for you. Did you come up with this whole idea? Because don't they have NFL themed ones now and
we were
all
first.
The major sports? Yeah.
We were really the first ones to say, I mean, we're going to create, this is an 18 gauge with handles. It was a nice quality box to begin with. It wasn't crap. So we would create the thing and then market them directly. But we came up with the idea. That's why we got the U.S. patent.
Why didn't you go to one of the, because this was 30, 40 years ago. Was it Baskerville? The big company, the big casket maker. But why didn't you go? Why didn't you try partner with them to go?
Oh,
hey.
We did.
Oh, did you?
Okay. Oh, sure. You know, I mean, we talked to all of those people and, you know, they meet with you and they go, well, yeah, but, you know, we have our own deal. And they'd come up with for whatever reason. But, you know, we were still selling them because the public liked them. The consumer liked them. So we would advertise in American Legion magazine and people would see it and go, oh, my gosh, Dad was a Navy man. I got to have this. He would love this. And so you would think once that happened, then the big casket makers would sort of jump in. But we didn't quite have enough time, I think, before we got bought out and killed.
Well, how did you do on that? the overall?
Well, not well, not as good as it certainly as it could have been. A little mailbox money for a while, but
what's I mean? So you did end up in the black, though.
Yeah,
no pun intended.
Sure.
Okay.
Did you you know, and I again, this was, God, what, 30 years ago that this was done, easily 20 years ago.
20 no, years ago? 25 what, years
20,
ago.
25.
25. Yeah. Did you do other bands besides Kiss?
No.
Now, did, you know, because you were working with Signatures Network, did you talk to Del and go, hey, how about Motley Crue? How about Black Sabbath? Can we get some of your other artists that Signatures represents to do this?
No, we didn't. And, you know, that would have been a good play, I think, but we didn't quite have enough time. It was not long after this that we went to New York to License 2000 and attended that big convention where all this was kind of, it was probably, we only had about a year more before we got, well, maybe a year and a half, I guess, worth of time. But we didn't have enough time to do what you're suggesting, but that's a would have been a good idea.
So when you know, we're talking caskets here, but I'm immediately thinking, what are other products? I mean, did you think about urns and stuff like that?
Yes, but I mean, remember, we're radio guys. We're really funeral guys. We didn't really know everything about it. We had a secondary product, which was called a crown. And the crown was an applique that would go on the lids, the head and the foot, and it would just apply. You wouldn't have to wrap the whole thing with plastic. It was a vacuformed piece that would fit over the right box. And we thought that's the way to do customization and still stick with the casket. There wasn't enough money in there. They're too small. There just wasn't enough money in there. Casket, I think that Gene's casket sold, you know, base price, unless you have it was almost $5,000.
I was gonna say the Kiss casket, I wanted to say it was like around $6,000. But don't forget, you could use it as a cooler.
Oh yeah, made a great cooler. Think of your friends coming over to backyard parties, and what are they gonna say? You're the hero of the neighborhood.
I mean, I'm sure Mark, Tommy, I know of a couple Kiss fans who bought it right away just because it was a Kiss item and they wanted it in their collection. And
that's the idea.
You know, frankly, would they be buried in it? Probably not. I mean, you can't use it if you're a collector. You can't, you know, you got to buy one to use and one not to use.
That's right. Because 50 years later, maybe or more, you're going to need it. And by then, it's not going to be in good shape. That was great fun.
Did you give the fans different graphic options? I can't remember.
No, there was one look, one option. Do you have a picture of it?
I'll Google it and pull one off of there. I didn't remember if you had offered one or two different
because
again,
one.
you were working with stock approved. Yeah. Product images. And I remember at Signatures at the time, it's like, okay, the licensees can use the solo images, they can use the Destroyer, the Love Gun. Yeah. You know, we've got these live images. You can use whichever ones you want. I didn't know if you would.
And you know, we were never a licensee. We didn't say, let's come in and license the Kiss logo from the band and then we'll make caskets with it and hope for the best. We really went in business with it. Because we weren't in a position to, you know, spend the money to license the name and then go to market with it. But that was okay. I mean, that's how we wanted to do it. That's how Gene wanted to do it. So it kind of worked out. We only had one design, one main design, and it's just beautiful.
Well, let's spend a little time talking about your history in radio. I know all three of us, you know, we're in our mid to late 50s here. We all grew up listening to classic rock radio. I grew up in Minneapolis with Tommy, Mark's in Detroit. I mean, you know, it seems like the Midwest was always a classic rock radio hotbed. I mean, sure. You know, the Midwest was great for Kiss. I mean, it was where Kiss broke in Detroit, and you know, sure. St. Louis was good to them, and you know, so many other Chicago. Let's talk a little bit about what radio was like before that change you talked about, and
well,
get a
you
feel
know,
for that.
I mean, I started in radio in high school in Galveston, Texas, and then from there came up to Houston, started college, started working at radio stations on the weekend, then I started doing, and this was 1969, and then we're doing the Flower Power Hour at night, you know, so the music changed, and it wasn't, you know, Herman's Hermits and the Monkees anymore on the top 40 station. At the same time, there was this whole other side of music that had just broken out. Summer of Love, 1969, Vietnam War is going on, San Francisco's going crazy, and the whole thing caught on musically first. And that's what drove the need to have a new kind of radio that was not top 40 radio, but something that was more indicative of what the people were into at the moment. So KLOL was the station that I played the first record on the air in the summer of 1970. And it was I'm Free by The Who. So the format was when a record's over, you put on another record. And the guys were very, very good, very talented at putting music together. And it was just the right people at the right time. So this was a magic station in a huge radio market like Houston is and still is. And we quickly became known among the KMET, KSAN, Riff, Wheels, all the stations that were into this. We were one of the early ones, and we made a huge impact. So the station was finally put to bed 50 years later by iHeartRadio, and that's how radio works now. You can expect it. It's coming, and it did. But I was obviously long gone from there. I came back to run the station from 83 to 95. So I ran it for 13 years. We were Billboard Rock Station of the Year during that time. And that's why there's a movie about out that's now that Mike McGuff directed, Runaway Radio, the movie is out chronicling what we did. And it was a intensely creative time with a lot of imagination, a lot of very talented people. Stevenson Pruitt Morning Show was well-known nationwide. When you see the movie, you'll understand it. It's hard to encapsulate the whole thing together, but it was one of those things that made national news.
It's one of those things that we love to talk about on the show where timeline means everything.
Yeah.
And if you didn't grow up during that time, like you were talking about,
right,
you just can't quite grasp what this meant. We did. And, you know, again, growing up in Minneapolis, we had KQRS in Minneapolis.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, unlike today when I can open up TuneIn or any other radio app and listen to any radio station anywhere in the world,
yeah,
you couldn't do that back then. It wasn't an option, but right. I remember being intimately familiar with some of these other legendary classic stations around the country. You know, Casey in St. Louis,
sure.
Any of the stations in Detroit, The Loop in Chicago. I remember KLOL in Houston. It's like, boy, these markets had some amazing rock radio stations. And wouldn't it have been such a treat to be able to listen? And I remember as a kid, we never took trips as far down as Texas, but we would go to St. Louis or we might go to Chicago. And, you know, my cousins in St. Louis, and, you know, we'd be listening to Casey, and I'd be like, oh my God, this is so incredible to listen to another legendary station, which before we hit the record, Mark mentions back then, these stations didn't all play the same music like it is today. You get one, you know, today you got one program director. I mean, when it comes to classic rock, there's not even a classic rock program director. It's play these songs from 20, 30, 40 years ago and just keep hitting the repeat button on them.
Just keep hitting the repeat. Here's 200 records. What's your problem? Just keep playing them over and over.
Exactly. But when we were kids, you might go into, you know, Tampa, another legendary rock market. You might go, you'd go there and you'd hear slightly different bands or the same bands, but different tracks. And it had a whole new feel and energy. And it was so exciting to be able to be exposed to that.
The experience that you're talking about is what is so lost today on people that just don't know why they should care about radio. They go, oh, I don't listen to radio. I listen to digital, and radio is what my mother listens to in the car, you know, and now even she's flipped over to digital. So yeah, what you're talking about is what made radio come alive, and the personalities and the people that would tell you why you should care.
Yes.
Tell me why I should care about this band you're getting ready to play for me that I've never heard before. And they would tell you that, and then you would care, and you would listen, and things started percolating from there. That's what we did.
And those, at least for me, and I think I could speak for others, those DJs back then were rock stars to me.
Sure.
They were just, I remember in Minnesota, you know, the state fair every summer, you know, all the stations would go out and broadcast for 10 days, 14 days at the radio, at the state fair, and they'd have their booths. And that might be the first time you actually go out there and see who is that voice I've been listening to for years.
Yes.
And by the way, he comes out between breaks out onto the balcony and shakes your hand and says hi and gives out albums. And it was just like, oh my God, you know, for me, again, it was like KQRS. It was like, oh my God, that's Hal Hammer. That's these legendary jocks that I grew up with that, you know, I listened to when I went to bed at night on the way to work, coming home from work.
Well, they meant something. Yes.
It was a connection that you had with these. And, you know, and I know a lot of people in radio and have done some speaking of at radio events, and that personality, that connection is what has been thrown away in radio. It's gone.
Maybe it'll come back. Maybe some, you know, like vinyl. I mean, people, oh, if it's vinyl, it's wonderful. Maybe this will somehow come full circle. I kind of doubt it, but it's possible.
I can tell you one of the reasons. I was just in the Tampa area last week, actually. And we were listening to The Shark, which is one of their classic rock stations. And my biggest complaint, again, you know, I'm in my late 50s and a complete music geek. I've said this for years, for at least the last 10 plus years, because I'm one of those people that do not listen to the radio. The only reason I was listening to the radio is because I had a rental car. But it only confirmed what really drives me crazy about classic rock. You should theoretically never hear the same song twice in at least a month.
Right.
I'm not being facetious. There's that many classic songs that somebody would know.
Yeah, sure.
But here I am driving, you know, to, matter of fact, for the oddly enough record stores in Tampa when I'm down there. And I heard, you know, it's a long way to the top yesterday on this station. And I'm hearing, you know, from AC/DC, and I'm hearing it again the next day. Yeah. And I heard it again the next day. And I'm like, why are you mixing Highway to Hell or Girls Got Rhythm? Or, you know, there's, why are we hearing the same AC/DC song
I'll
3 days
why.
In a row on a classic rock station? Should
because that
never happen.
That national program director that has never been to your market, never will, but programs your music and 60 other markets like it, has one rule. They don't know what they like. They like what they know. And so they'll keep giving you the same song over and over and over. And that's what has killed them, because people like you and me hear it and go, what? Why am I hearing Stairway to Heaven again? I should hear that twice a year.
And it's even a bigger problem since streaming hit, because this is something I say all the time now. Radio needs to give up. You can't compete on music with streaming services anymore.
Right.
You know, I've been using Spotify for 10 years now.
Me too.
And it intimately knows everything I love and listen to. And it will do what Mark just described.
Yeah.
It will give me a playlist randomly generated for this week of these deep cuts of the artists that you do routinely listen to.
Yeah.
And, you know, so what I always say is, if I want music as a fan, I'm just cranking up Spotify, because it's going to give me what radio will never give me. But what radio could do, used to do, and Spotify and streaming will never be able to do, is radio can give me personality and a connection.
That's right. You know, they don't know what they like. They like what they know. God, that just killed it. The personalities can make the difference, but they won't allow them to talk. They sure won't allow them to pick any records. No, you can't do that.
You can't ad lib a description of that song and say, oh, you know, I remember 40 years ago when I saw Led Zeppelin come to town. Let me tell you about this cool thing that Jimmy Page did. That's the connection that I want to hear. Right. That's what streaming radio, even with Spotify doing their AI DJ, is never going to be able to go to that extreme of giving me that personality and that connection.
Nor do they want to. Thing about Spotify, Pandora, all these people, they don't own any microphones. They don't have any microphones there. They don't own them. They don't do that. It's just a music machine, and it's going to play the tracks that you like or may like or should like in your lane of the highway, but it's not going to ever talk to you about the music or anything else.
Or your local community, to your point.
Right.
It's never, you know, Spotify isn't going to talk to Mark about what's coming to town in Detroit,
right,
and Tommy about what's coming to town in Minneapolis, and me about what's coming to town in San Francisco, or the musical history that came out of these great cities. Spotify doesn't know that and never will know that.
They never will, and that's not the business they're in. That's what they'll tell you. It's not the business they're in.
I got a friend down in Houston who was in radio for many years. His name is Dave Ritz. Do you happen to know him?
I do know Dave Ritz. He has a record store, or did have.
He used to, yeah. Owned Infinity Records. Now he just has a record show once every 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and, you know, and taking off of what you guys were talking about, that's why I went out and I bought a turntable, is because I want to control the music. And there's just something too sterile about Spotify for me. I just don't enjoy it as much as literally controlling. It's just, I guess it's just your own taste. But I, to Michael's point, I miss those DJs, because that's what I like about listening to Mark Striegel, for instance, on
Sirius XM.
Sirius XM. Because he tells stories. Keith Roth tells stories.
Right, sure.
And I enjoy that, you know?
Well, you know, when broadcast radio wants to give you 18 minutes an hour of commercial time because they have to increase the load because they can't get the rates they used to get. So they up the load. It's just a self-defeating.
Yeah.
Then you're in a situation where for music and entertainment, I can beat you all day long. Let me tell you about a rock station that I do now for NASA. We've done third rock radio for NASA for 12 years, and it is probably the best new rock indie alternative station you'll ever hear online, I think, or anywhere. It's really, we do the whole thing. We curate it. We talk to you about what's going on at NASA. We talked about the eclipse. We did 2 hours live with NASA last week for the eclipse. So Third Rock Radio it talks to you about the music and does a lot of the things that you're talking about in the world of sort of new rock indie alternative. And I encourage you to check it out.
I just Googled it. I've got the link open, and when we're done here, I promise you, I'm going to check it out. I mean,
let's share the link.
I love
thirdrockradio.net.
I love checking out local radio. I love when I go on a vacation or a family trip somewhere to scan and find that local station, which, you know, may not have the best trained jocks and the tightest format, but there's something interesting that grabs you. And it's like, yeah, you know, I love the fact that they had to break in and do a farm report.
See, this is something that Third Rock Radio did we've done four live broadcast 2 hour shows from the International Space Station.
Oh, that's so amazingly cool.
With an astronaut playing DJ. I mean, we kind of set it up for him and tell him what to play and what to say and stuff, but then they make up their own stuff. But it's pretty wonderful. We'll do a couple of million listeners a month in like 20 different countries. So it's extremely forward thinking from NASA, who first thing they said when we walked in and talked to them about this was, this is so great because it does not sound educational. You're able to talk about what's going on at NASA without it sounding like a NASA channel for the school.
It's not like a PBS show.
It's nowhere near it. It's a rock station that happens. So we go, welcome new. Well, the whole thing's a metaphor. It's new rock discovery at the speed of light. And it's like no one knows more about discovering new rock than NASA. So we kind of put all the metaphors together, and it's you're here for the fun of discovery, and you're discovering new music while NASA discovers all the things they do. So that's how the metaphor works, and boy, does it. It really does work.
All right, so I got to put my Kiss hat back on.
Yeah.
Do you have at least one or two Ace Frehley songs in there, since that guy is filled with space related songs?
I think we do. Oh sure. I mean, that station's got 1,000 songs in the library, not 200.
I mean, I've got it open here, and I'm scanning through some of your recent playlists. AC/DC, What's Next to the Moon.
Love it.
Yeah. That's right.
But that's exactly my point, Mike. And sure. I actually want to go a step further, and I want to ask our guest, and I brought this up on the show before. Now, speaking just for because I, in my head, if classic rock was done right, I could see this working in some regards. The big problem, like I said, with classic rock is they'll play the same songs over and over instead of, like I said, going a month or two without hearing a repeat.
Mm-hmm.
But there's enough familiar music that you shouldn't have to repeat anyway. I mean, look at bands like AC/DC and especially the Rolling Stones. How many album cuts and hit songs do they have that you could literally put one a day for at least 30?
Sure.
There's that. There's your the one Stone. But my big complaint is there are so many great acts. Ace, that's what made me just think about it. Ace Frehley. There's no place for Cheap Trick's new release, Alice Cooper, Deep right. Purple, Ted right. Nugent. These are all acts, AC/DC, that within the last 5 years, sticks, they're within the last record. 5 years, have released new music and got Zippo.
Yeah. Airplay. There's no airplay, no.
Well, here's what I think would be cool. I think if a classic rock station would want to take a chance and say, at the 5 o'clock hour every day, it's going to be your favorite artists, new music by them.
Yeah.
And then slowly incorporate anything that would catch on, or because it will, if you play it, and if people are listening, they're going to go, oh my God, that Cheap Trick song is just as good as Surrender. Why don't,
scared
the one
to
off
death,
their new record.
Scared to death to think that you'll hear it go, oh, I don't know that record. I'm tuning out. That's what keeps it from happening. And I don't buy any of that.
I don't either because, look, one of the great things, if you want to call it progressive rock, because before it was called classic rock, it was called progressive rock.
Right.
They took chances. I mean, progressive rock played songs that were 10 minutes long.
I was going to say, when I did college radio, we always knew if you had to take a bathroom break, put on Iron Butterfly. That'll give you plenty of time.
That's right.
To get out of the studio, walk to the bathroom, and get back, and still have 3 minutes left on the song.
But what happened with some of those opuses, from Freebird to Stranglehold to Do You Feel Like We Do from Frampton? At 14 minutes. What happened along the way when you played them? People went, long song, sure, but fuck, is that good?
Yeah, sure.
You bet. You know, and those songs, like I said, those three songs I just listed, those are well over single, you know what I mean? Those are 8 minute plus songs, each one.
At our company here in Houston, we are a streaming radio company. We're the content company behind TuneIn. We do 38 different, well, more than that, damn near 50 different format stations for TuneIn. And these are quite good. They are quite broad, and they do move into a lot of these different areas. So there's still hope.
Do you, Pat, do you think, You mentioned this in passing that, you have sort of forward thinking. Is forward thinking gone in traditional terrestrial radio? Is there anybody out there, even one or two stations, that you're like, these people are trying it?
You know, the nonprofits, what's the one in Austin?
KUTX.
KUTX in Austin is college, but it's pretty good, and they will try some of these things, but it's college radio still, and there's that, and that's good, but I want to do it and make a lot of money doing it too at the same time, so that it's fun and you know, there's a way to keep score, but there are, I think, a handful is the answer of stations that are trying this kind of approach, but part of it is you can't find the people. There are not that many people who want to be a part of the industry. It's not that cool anymore.
Well, it's a dying industry too, though.
Stations are having an extremely difficult time hiring salespeople, because just think, how would you like to come work for me and sell radio ads? And the guy goes, I think I'm going to sell gym socks down at the mall. It'd be fine for me. That sounds like more fun. So that's what's killing it, because economically, nobody can really get ahead. I mean, look what happened to Odyssey. When the stock went to 57 cents and, then down from there. So, I mean, there are people that used to be great radio companies that tried to do things in an exciting way and went out of business.
Well, look at what just happened recently with AM. They were going to take it out of all the cars.
Hopefully that's not going to happen.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, what incentive would there be for a young go-getter to get into the radio game in sales? There's zero.
Well, there isn't. I mean, you know, if they're smart, they're looking at it and going, well, I see that radio basically fires all their talent when they've been there for years. Once you get to a certain pay level,
you're gone.
Yeah, you're gone. I'll get some kid to do it for nothing, or we'll automate it. There's no future. Add to that, you know, and listen, AI. I thought about radio for about this long when I did college radio, and then I interned at a commercial station in southern Minnesota. And my first thought was, but I don't want to be sitting in a position where it's like, sure, you can have a job. You got to come to, no disrespect to anybody there, but you got to come to bumfuck North Dakota and broadcast there. And oh, by the way, a year later, you're out because the ratings say nobody likes you. So now move to the middle of Wyoming.
Yeah.
And it's try it there. I mean, I've got friends who, you know, that the old WKRP up and down the dial.
Yeah. Radio,
you know,
gypsies.
And you get burnt out from that. Why would you want to go into it?
But there are still people that did that and came through, you know.
Sure.
I was so fortunate. I moved from Galveston, Texas to Houston, 50 miles away, and really never left except when I was having to live in Dallas. So besides that, I didn't have to go from small market to small market and build up, but that's unusual. And I came to management from the programming side, not the sales side. Very unusual. So
I remember I was at the Midwest Radio Conclave in Minneapolis years ago. And, you know, and this was probably 10, 15 years ago. So the internet and podcasting and everything was there. And it, somebody had made a comment that, you know, as to grooming the future talent, they're like, but it seems to me radio doesn't want to groom future talent. They're not hiring the kid to do Saturday overnights.
That's right.
To see if they'll become good enough and learn enough to move them into evenings during the week. Because I was on a podcast panel, they're like, they want to go find the podcaster who's already got an audience and just bring them in and think their audience will just come with them.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't work that way.
It just doesn't work that way. It all goes back to you're cutting your own throat because you want to disassociate yourself with your local community, and you don't want to invest in personality.
And they don't understand what live means. When you sit in a control room and you sit there for 4 hours while you play records for 4 hours and you crack the mic and talk all the time and talk about the records and you do it 5 days a week, you get good at this after a while and you start to feel comfortable and then things occur to you that would not. And that's what they're missing. They are not training anyone. They're not giving anyone the room to be good or to fail.
Yeah. Yeah. It just seems like they don't want to. It's come down to a pure financial decision. It's cheaper to just automate and have one person manage all of the stations versus hiring somebody who understands each local market.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's,
let me tell you about our movie.
Yes, please.
this 90-minute film, I call it film, still film to me, feature movie that Mike McGuff directed, tells you, it's called Runaway Radio, and you can find it on Amazon and Apple TV, Amazon Prime, and Google Play, I guess, and DirecTV. I mean, it's out there. Runaway Radio chronicles how a local FM rock station came into being, grew, made some mistakes, learned, brought me back in. And then things got really good. And it turned into now, 25 years after they shut this off, people are coming to see a movie about what we did. That's pretty exciting. And when we first started the station in 1970, I never thought I'd be sitting here where people are going to see a movie about what we did 50 years later. But they are. But they are.
You know, that's a testament to what you created and what you were doing, that, you know, it's living on that way. I mean, we say this about KISS when somebody says, it wasn't good. It's like, you don't last 50 years if you weren't good at something.
That's right.
You can't do a movie on the station if the station actually didn't achieve something pretty significant.
That's right.
Well, that reminds me of when we had, because of the relaunch of Cream magazine, which I'm now subscribing to.
Yeah.
Cream, you know, went from the late 60s, I think really into the early 90s before it was dissolved. And then, you know, they got it going back again. And
that's good.
It's a fun read. It comes out quarterly and I love it. And I like reading about some of the new bands. The latest issue also had a nice feature on Devo. So they go back to the, some of the acts that, but the irreverence and the humor and everything, it's still there. It's just like reading Cream back in the day. But like you said, because I remember here in Detroit when they debuted the film and how great it was to go to a movie theater and see a movie, a documentary on this thing that was such a big part of my life. And especially if you're a KISS fan, I mean, Cream's, as they said in the doc, Cream sold KISS and KISS sold Cream.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean,
that's right.
It's a good thing, you know. So
we really did all work together. The band would come to the radio station. We had George Harrison on the air doing an interview. He's in the
freaking
movie,
Beatle.
Actually. Yeah. And you'll see how all that worked.
Well, looking forward to it. Like I was telling you before we hit record, because I love stuff like that. I love anything to do with radio and especially classic rock radio and just rock radio in general, because as you can tell, I'm passionate about it. And that's what bothers me so much. I wish I could turn on the radio. I will tell you, I do this little thing with myself here that I'll turn on the radio and I'm like, how long until I hear Smells Like Teen Spirit? You're like 5, 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
How long before I hear Jeremy by Pearl Jam? What a same thing. I'm like, it's not that those aren't, you know, and those aren't bands that I'm really into, and it's not that they're bad songs, but it's like, we get it. Okay.
Yeah.
You have to play that every 20 minutes, one of those songs. I can't even turn on the radio without hearing that.
You know, Mark, to go along with that, it's like, how many times now do you want to listen to every classic rock station do the top 500 classic rock tunes in conjunction with the Indy 500 on the Indy 500 weekend? And you know exactly what those 500 tunes are going to be, because it's the same 500 tunes for the last 40 years.
You just don't know the order.
Yeah. You know, this year maybe Led Zeppelin is number two and The Who is number one. You know, but the same exact songs are there. And it's just like,
so radio, wake up, radio. I mean, you can get it back.
They don't, it's not designed for people like us that grew up on it. It's designed to sell stuff. So I think the reason they play Pearl Jam and the stuff that Mark was mentioning is because that's what people want to listen to for short periods of time.
They hop
into their car, they're in it for 10, 15 minutes, and they're gone. So there's probably a really good chance if they play Jeremy again at the 2 p.m. hour, the person who heard it at noon isn't going to hear it at 2.
Mm.
You know, Tommy, I do, you know, on a level do understand that.
Well, I know. It's just music doesn't have, it's not, this isn't about music. This is about selling people crap.
Well, Tommy, what you just said, you and I actually share a brain in this. I don't have a Spotify, never did, never will. I own way too much music because it all means so much to me. Mm-hmm. And like you, Tommy, I still buy music. Mm-hmm. I, you know, mm-hmm. that's, it means enough to me that I have no problem going to buy music and support music and go see music and read about music. I love it so much that I mm-hmm. hate seeing it treated like garbage. And again, if you're going to play Pearl Jam, which I'm fine with, I mean, I'm not a fan, but I know millions of people are. Don't play the same song over. Same thing with Nirvana.
Yeah.
Okay, a band I'm not into, but Jesus Christ, they have more than one song. You know, you just seem to hear those ones over and over and over. And again, getting back to this being a Kiss podcast, there's more than I Was Made for Loving You and Rock and Roll All Night. You know, Live a Little, go, you know, play Calling Dr. Love at some point.
Pat, it's funny. A few years ago, we had a podcast Kiss channel on an internet station where once a week we'd do a 2-hour mm-hmm. show, and our big marketing push was, we promise you will never hear Rock and Roll All Night on our station.
Right.
You'll hear everything else you want to hear, but we will never play Rock and Roll All Night.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Good for you.
You know, it's as we're talking about this, I just have to remind myself, you know, when we were all listening to music and it was in its heyday on radio, there was a lot less competition for radio and for our attention.
Yeah.
Meaning, yeah. You know, and again, this is going to come off sounding like grandpa, but timeline means everything. I mean, you know, before the internet, before MTV existed, maybe before cable TV even existed, you had three TV channels. And as a kid, if you wanted to entertain yourself, you could listen to music, play a record, hopefully somebody take you to the movie theater, or go outside and play, or a board game. That was about it. That was all you were competing with.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, radio I'll go back to it. Radio can't even compete with streaming services when it comes to the music.
Well, the delivery
Spotify will have the library that radio will never have.
Yeah. I mean, the delivery system certainly changed. And that's why radio, I think, went the wrong direction. You need to go deeper into personality, not run from it. Because all you have left is personality. Because they've got the music.
You've got to embrace what makes you different and unique. And sadly, they fired what made them different and unique. Right. And now it's for the most part, radio is just music. And if that's all you are, you're never going to play the music I want to hear.
Plus never. 18 minutes of spots an hour.
Yeah.
So I'm already going, streaming radio beats this all day long.
Yeah. Oh, another commercial on radio. I'm going to launch Spotify and listen to Spotify now.
Yeah, because
I don't need to listen to. I can't listen to any more commercials.
That's right.
Between songs that I'm tired of hearing anyway.
That's it in a nutshell.
I always hope that something will change, but I think like you, I think it's too late. I think the ship has sailed. I think you're mm-hmm. dealing with accountants who are just looking at the bottom line on a quarterly budget going, okay, you hit your number or you didn't hit your number.
Bottom line could be so much bigger if somebody don't want to take that chance.
Take the chance, the bottom line could get smaller.
Rather, let's just let the stock go to 57 cents and then go, we tried.
Let's just get comfortable with the little bit we've got right now instead of trying to grow and do something different. It's sad. Pat, it's always, I can speak for the three of us. We always love having somebody from radio come in and share their history and their stories. Because again, timeline means everything. radio was so important to kids growing up.
Mm-hmm.
It was where you discovered music. It's where you heard about your favorite band coming to town in concert.
Mm-hmm.
It's where you heard that your favorite band was going to release a new album. You know, radio was that connection for us as kids.
It was so beautiful. It really was. I mean, we didn't have 1,900 other stations on our phones. We didn't have phones, you know. But
Yeah.
yes, it, you know, in a high traffic city like Houston, where it's one big traffic jam, and so many other the big cities that you named, when you're in the car, I knew I had you. You were mine for an hour during your long traffic commute, because you've
Yep.
got me or the other guy or the other guy down the dial. That's about it. But now, you know, you've got 1,000 other choices. That does have an effect.
Sure does. It sure does. Yeah. I mean, it's just I miss the comfort of that familiar DJ voice waking me up in the morning and talking me to sleep at night. I mean, it was reassuring. We talk about, you know, the podcast in the sense that why do people listen to us? Because I want to think it's not just tuning in for the guest we have. They like to hear us talk. And if we have a guest, it makes it even better. And a radio morning show used to be that way. I could care less, you know, who was the guest on KQRS in the morning. I just wanted to hear that familiar voice of the morning show DJ who I even didn't need all the bits they would do. It was just like your voice was what made me feel comfortable. I
Yes.
connected with you, and it didn't matter what the rest of your show had. It was, I knew you would be there.
I'm so glad you guys get all this so well, and I'm glad we got to hook up and have this kind of conversation. This is really really good.
I am too. I'm glad this, you know, again, when I got the email of like, you want to talk to Pat about the Kiss caskets? I'm like, is there really a lot to talk about for a Kiss casket? And this turned into a fascinating conversation,
Yeah.
Pat. Fascinating. So yes, everybody, please go check out Runaway Radio, anywhere you can stream movies.
Yes.
You know, listen to radio if you get a chance. Try it. You know, check.
You know, by the way, the film premiered in Minneapolis. I don't know why, but what was the film festival?
Sound Unseen.
Sounds Unseen Film Festival in Minneapolis is where Runaway Radio did its theatrical premiere. And things just work out that way.
Yep.
Yep.
And of course, check out thirdrockradio.net.
Yep.
And you're going to get it. I mean, it's a crazy playlist I'm looking at here. I mean,
that's
it's
right.
It's definitely not what you would get from your local programmed
it is
classic
not.
rock station.
It's new rock from space.
I mean, I will say, okay, Billy Thorpe, Children of the Sun, but there's nothing wrong with that song. That's
yeah.
a good song.
Yeah. That's right.
That's a deep cut that a lot of stations won't even want to touch these days.
Well,
and remember,
the problem is though is that that's all he ever did is, and he just kept re-recording a new version of Children of the Sun.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, come on.
19
cool
live
drums
version.
And
yeah.
Pat, again, thank you so much. I'm going to be checking out your station here. We're going to definitely check out the movie.
Thanks.
I encourage all of our listeners to do that as well. And
thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Best of luck.
Best of luck to you.
Thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate your time today.
You're welcome.
Yep.
Another so fun episode.
Great guy.
Talking about the good old days. I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah, we're grandpa sitting on the porch yelling at the kids.
Get off my
But, you know, man, timeline back then, it was one of my best Kiss related memories is Creatures of the Night era. I'm listening to KQRS in Minneapolis. And again, I had no idea Kiss was going on tour. Well, I think I probably knew they were going on tour, but I didn't know when. I didn't know they were going to come to our town. You know, like now, you know a band's entire tour itinerary. You know everything. Back then, you didn't know squat. And I'm listening to KQRS radio. And all of a sudden, I heard the Creatures of the Night radio ad. And I kid you not, I bolted out of my bedroom, ran down the hall screaming to my parents, "Oh my God, Kiss is coming in concert." I mean, I was so excited. Anyway, it would have been my first Kiss concert, but that's how important radio was to us back then. And whether it was that concert announcement or, "Oh my God, I just heard the brand new song by so-and-so," and you had no idea there was going to be a brand new song. So, you know, it was really special. And I kid you not, meeting some of these DJs out at the Minnesota State Fair, that was the coolest thing in the, that was as cool as meeting a rock star. To me, it was just being able to shake hands and see what that voice actually looked like was so cool. It's gone. Doesn't exist anymore. So, yeah, you know, check out thirdrockradio.net. Check out Runaway Radio, the documentary on KLOL. And more importantly, Mark the Mortician.
It's a true story.
Holy crap. Tommy, what? I don't know where we're going with this, but something's got to be done with Mark the Mortician. I don't know if somebody's got to make a t-shirt of Mark that looks like the Undertaker from WWF. I don't know, but we can't let more, this one just
would be more
go
like,
by.
No, it'd be more like Michael Keaton's character in Night Shift. You know, he'd run like a prostitution service out of the morgue. You know, he's very industrious, and he'd sell Kiss caskets, and he'd, you know, and for an extra $50, he will put jean makeup on your loved one.
That was a true story, man. I was going to school to do that, and did that for about a year, and just said, matter of fact, just to give you guys some a little story about it. As you guys, you know, I've been on this show for a long time now, 10 plus years, and I'm usually a pretty happy guy and, you know, like to laugh and stuff. It was my mother who said to me, it's like, "What's wrong with my son?" I said, "What are you talking about, Mom?" She's like, "You're not yourself." And I said, "What do you mean?" She goes, "My happy boy, I just noticed." I said, "Well, Mom, around death all day. What do you want?" She says, "Well," and she said, "Well, is that what how you want to be the rest of your life?"
Change your mind right there.
Yeah, yeah.
When in reality, he was just bummed after the first or second day of work, he found out the girl in drawer number one, her cooch was drier than a bucket of sand, and he couldn't find any Vaseline.
God. I just... This is going to have to, we're going to have to work this in a lot. We got to think about this one. And there's a homework question. I mean, as a listener for since episode one, what do we do about Mark revealing he was a mortician?
I was going to school to be one. I was
okay,
not,
but still,
it was probably very still. Metal at the time. It felt very metal.
Well, I will tell you, that line of work is a whole lot different than what you think it is.
I'm not sure what I think it is, actually.
No,
I think differently, but with you,
anyway, that little tidbit we just can't leave to the side here and pass.
Well, actually, I knew about it. Mark had told me when we were in LA that he went to school for that. I'm like,
oh, okay. Huh? Yeah. I was going to say, but I didn't think I ever said anything on the show about it.
No, I don't think so.
But remember that one day we were driving around LA and we were talking about all kinds of weird crap. And
oh, was... you know what? I think we were talking. Yeah, because we were talking about the old death tours.
Yes,
I think that's what we were.
After I took you to actually after I took you to the Tate House.
Yes, not the Taint House. That's where Tommy wanted to take me.
But it was closed. It doesn't open till midnight. Damn.
Oh God. Hey people, this is the personality that's missing on radio.
Yeah.
This is the personality. You know, you might still get this on a morning show, but for the most part, even morning shows are so freaking programmed and scripted right. These days that
yeah,
but we would have been marched right into the program director after that.
Yeah, it's like, did you mention Taint on the air?
I know.
The
I
answer
said,
is
Taint.
Cock a doodle doo.
Oh my God. Yeah, so thank God we're on the internet and there's no censorship or rules
yet.
Other than our own good taste. And I think by now you realize we don't have a lot of good taste.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap it.
So homework, I don't know. Talk about Mark the Mortician. Have you seen the movie? That's going to be the new character. Lisa's the weather girl, Mark's the mortician. We've got a wrestling team that's starting here.
There you
the
go.
Four horsemen. I don't know. I've lost my train of thought.
It's derailed.
Just comment about this great, fascinating interview, whether it's about the Kiss Casket, whether it's about radio, whether it's KLOL, the documentary. Leave us some comments. You can leave comments on Facebook, on YouTube. You know, if you listen on Spotify, you can also leave comments in the Spotify player. Do that, people. Leave us a comment on Spotify and let us know. Maybe I'll actually create a poll on Spotify related to Mark the Mortician. Who's the better Three Sides character, Mark the Mortician or Lisa the Weather Girl? Not the cuter, the better.
I'm on Team Lisa.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, yeah, there's no comparison to that. You got to do better than that. You got to at least make it a challenge.
We'll come up with something because that's true. Mark hasn't done stuff like had a hummingbird attack her. And
right. So it could be Mark.
Fall off her chair. And
yeah, Mark the Magician versus Five Man Kiss.
I will tell you one of the first days that I worked at the funeral home, I remember the family dropped off the clothes for the deceased, and I bring it downstairs, and I open the bag, and the guy takes out a pair of shoes. He looks at me deadpan and says, "Swear to God, this is my first day on the job, first 5 minutes here." We open the paper bag, pull out the shoes. The guy looks at me and goes, "I wouldn't be caught dead in these." Swear to God, that happened.
Oh, that's
it's all
awesome.
It's all
horrible,
about timing
awesome.
And delivery.
It is.
Timing and delivery.
All right. Let's say goodnight.
All right. You know what you got to do. Three Sides of the Coin. We're out of here. We'll see everybody next week.
You have something to say? Leave a voicemail or send us a text message. Call 320-515-4771. Sides of the Coin, provided by LarryDavisVoice.com and by JessicaMarsVoice.com. That's Mars with a Z.